And good morning, live from our KGGF studios here in downtown Coffeyville on this Wednesday. I'm Sam Speck, glad you're with us, as we're joined by the K-State Research and Extension agents, Barbara Ames and Jacob Weber. Barbara, Jacob, thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning.
Good morning, thank you.
Glad to always have these conversations, as we do just about every Wednesday. We get to hear about the concerns, the questions that they may have heard, some courses upcoming as well, and I think a good place to start is something we've all been feeling and excited for, is finally transitioning into summertime.
That's
it's
right.
Yay. This last 7 days since I talked to you, last week we were talking about too much water, and now we're talking about the water finally receding, moving its way back, and summertime it comes. So with that, it's probably prime time right now in your garden, I would imagine.
Yeah, things starting to look very good.
Good.
And I got green beans planted, and they're pole beans, and they're taking off now. They like the sunshine. My potatoes, they love the weather.
Oh, absolutely.
They're big. I haven't checked any new potatoes yet, but I know they're there. And corn, I know the farmers, their corn is not as far as long, but mine actually is pushing tassels now.
Oh, wow.
So that's pretty good.
Yeah, I heard this very unfortunate stat that there's a lot of, even up in Ohio, I think is the worst, but a lot of them don't even have the corn planted.
That's
at
right.
this point.
That's
they're not even available to.
A lot of crops not planted yet, yeah. And it's going to be a tough year. It's going to be catch-up if the weather cooperates and the farmers can get out in the field, and probably quite a few fields are going to be planted to soybeans. There's still time. I guess I'm not the ag agent, but I know a little bit about agriculture. So I'm sure that and the wheat has turned down here a couple more weeks, and I'm sure we'll be in the wheat harvest. I have no prediction as to what the yields are going to be. That would be James Coover's area of expertise. But I got to thinking everything's looking really good. And then I remembered last year, about this time, in about another week, we have some critters going to show up going to cause a little bit of an issue. And It's moving this way, too. I don't know if there were any reports in Coffeyville yet, but a small beetle, introduced species, been in this country for quite a number of years, but it's slowly expanding its territory, and it has expanded its territory into Columbus, Kansas, USA last year, big time. Mm. It's called a Japanese beetle. And they... I guess the best description is they're mob feeders.
Oh, so they come in packs.
They come in big groups, and you may not even know they're there. And then you go out and look at your grapevines, for example. My grapevines, went out and looked at, what's going on? There's a lot of tissue leaf missing in the leaves, and of course they're skeletons where the leaves used to be. And then I see what's happening. They not only moved in my grapevines, they were thicker than fleas on a dog's back in the crepe myrtle shrubs that I had.
Wow.
So I took care of them.
So let's talk about that. I mean, like you had said, has there been reports done in Columbus this year as well?
Oh, they're going to be there.
They're going to be there.
Yeah, they're established. Territory is expanding. I know they're in Crawford County, been there for several years. And I'm sure that Parsons, but it eventually is going to get over this area. They love all to feed on all sorts of plants, in particular corn silk being a desirable food source for them. Not so good if you're trying to grow corn. They really like beans, and particularly love grapevines.
You
roses,
know that very well.
Yeah, roses. They'll feed on a lot of different plants. Most of the time, they'll feed on the plants that you like to grow, and what you do is you be watching for them. Okay, what do they look like? They're a little bit smaller than a potato beetle, not too much smaller, and they do have a very shiny metallic green. We call it pronotum. That's the head part of the insect. Well, not actually the head, but right behind the head, but in front of the wing covers. The wing covers are bronze looking, They do have some very distinctive two large white spots on the tail end of the insect. I call them headlights on the rear end. And then along the sides where their legs are or come out, but below the wing covers, there's five white dots on each side. They're small white dots. Very easy recognized insect. When you see them, you're not just going to see one. You're going to see probably 20 dozen of them in one spot. Well, unless they're just initially moving, you might see one or two scouts.
Scouting the area.
When they find particularly good food source, a very desirable food source, then they start giving off an odor or a pheromone. And that's an open invitation for any other Japanese beetle in the area to come and feed. And there's a particular reason why they do that, because when they're feeding, they're also getting together, companions, and taking care of business so they can have offsprings. In other words,
we could do it again next year, right?
Yeah, it's like a Japanese beetle orgy, but they're not only doing that, they're feeding, so I coined the word.
No wonder there's so many.
Gorgy.
Gorgy. No wonder there's so many of them, I'll tell you what.
Yeah. And yeah, they reproduce. Okay, what can you do about them? Well, some companies have put together what's called a Japanese beetle trap with a pheromone, something to get off an odor that attracts them to the trap. And it does catch a lot of Japanese beetles. I've seen that. Only problem is it's an open invitation. Come on in. And so it brings a lot more in than what you get rid of. And the end result is that you're probably going to have more damage than what you did before. Best thing to do, scout for Japanese beetles when you find them. If it's just one, probably not have to get too excited, but just keep an eye out. But when they start moving in mass, then it's time to take care of business. Best thing to do is use a stomach poison insecticide such as Seven or Permethrin. They work very well. Spray works very well. What I did last year, I noticed they were in my grapevines and also in my crepe myrtle hedge. I just sprayed the grapevines in the crepe myrtle hedge. And it wiped them out. And I didn't have any more Japanese beetles for the rest of the summer. Kind of like a trap crop. I didn't have to spray the garden. So that took care of that particular problem. But they're going to be back again this year. And I expect the first indication of Japanese beetles emerging should be here in about another week or two. You're going to be an issue. Japanese beetle adults live for about 6 to 8 weeks, about 6 weeks generally. So we're going to see them in June, July, into early August, about the last part of them. They have a one-year life cycle, so they spend most of the time as a grub in the soil, and they will infest lawns and can become a serious problem there. Indications are that after the initial invasion of Japanese beetles, they kind of settle down. There's not nearly as many as the first initial wave, so that can become quite a shock to many gardeners when that happens. So this is something that we might be looking at or watching for here in the next 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah, it's kind of something that I was, referring to. You just have to be vigilant for it, because like you had mentioned, you had them last year. You knew that they're probably going to come this year, but there's really nothing that you can do in the garden or around the house or around the backyard that's going to keep them from coming from year to year.
Well, yeah, there's no prevention. Keep them out. They're going to come, and when they do, the best defense is a good offense on them, because that's about the only thing you can do is just watch for them. When you have them, when they come in, start feeding. If they have several of them, it's a good idea to start taking care of business, because they're going to give off that feeding scent that attracts more of them. And if you kind of keep that population down, that will help reduce the amount of damage that you're going to see. They're mainly a leaf feeder. So foliage that disappears means that crop crops may suffer considerably.
Well, we got a couple of minutes left here. As Barbara, I wanted to hit on those courses that we got coming up here. And then in the next segment, I think you and I will go deep into at-home tips and for safe home canned food. So we'll do that in the 8 o'clock hour. But we do have some stuff coming up, not only next week, but just kind of later stuff to put on your calendar as well throughout the year. Serve Safe coming up next week, though. Is that right?
That's right. Serve Safe coming up next week on June the 12th from 9:30 to 12:30 in the, 9:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. So it's a three-hour class. It's going to be in the morning and just kind of ending up right after lunch there. It's going to be at the Southeast Area Research and Extension Center there in Parsons. They're at the corner of 400 and Ness Road. Registration is $15, and that is actually due today, but I've kind of extended that out till the end of the week if you want to get that in. To register, you want to, or to get more information, you can call our K-State Research and Extension office in Independence, and that number is 620-331-2690, or you can email me at bames@ksu.edu. This utilizes materials from the National Restaurant Association, and it promotes food quality, and it just helps people understand and how to control foodborne illnesses.
Yeah, I mean, it's very preventable, and I know there's a lot of individuals out there that's like, oh, you know, I've been cooking since I was young, I've been cooking with mom, and we've had these techniques, you know, and sometimes you pass over things. Maybe, you know, like I just explained last week, the field test or whichever, that's not the right way to determine
that's
if that's
right.
the internal temperature of a
that's
chicken
right.
or a beef.
Get it's... that thermometer out.
Exactly.
So we'll talk a lot about that kind of thing, and, you know, cleaning and sanitizing, what is that, and why do you need to do both of them, and personal hygiene. And it's a good, you know, it's I guess, designed for food handlers in long-term care facilities or schools or wherever you do that professionally. But it's also a great course for people who work in their church kitchen or community dinners and things like that. There's a lot of common sense things that sometimes we just overlook, like you said. So I totally recommend it for anybody that handles food like that.
Yeah, well, and with catering, you always find that they have a mass amount to store later, and there's always right ways of storing
right.
things, especially hot foods.
Right.
So that's a big thing as well. So that's coming up next week. Very cool. Looks like they have graciously extended your opportunity to be a part of the class till the end of the week. But and then
right.
also the later in the summer, we got your next installment of Dining
right.
with Diabetes.
Clear through the month of August. The Dining with Diabetes course is... four consecutive sessions. Usually it's every week, and in August that's the way we're going to do it. It's going to be meeting the 1st, the 8th, the 15th, and the 22nd in August. And this is a course where, you know, it's specially designed for people with type 2 diabetes or their caregivers or, you know, people who have that in their family that are at risk for it, that just want to learn more about how to prevent it or how to manage type 2 diabetes. And we do talk about diabetes management, and we talk about sugars and carbs and, you know, salt and fat and all those kinds of things. But one of the things that we do that sets us apart from most of the other education that's going on right now is that we actually do cooking in the class. So you're going to get to be there while we're preparing probably three different dishes, and then you get to sample those and go home with recipes and so forth.
Nice. Well, yeah, and as much information as you get about the food, you'll get a lot of camaraderie. You may make a friend or five, you know, and
right.
I think that's a big thing about not only, I mean, these courses, but it's almost a support group as well, you know. It seems like almost everybody out there has somebody involved in their family with cancer or heart disease or
right.
diabetes, something like that. And you're affected by it one way or the next. And again, the camaraderie, it's good to have support. Whether
that's right.
I mean, maybe you are the only one suffering with it in your, you know, foreseeable friends and family group, but it's good to have people to bounce
that's
things
off. It's
one
of the great things that also does come out of the course. And I forgot to say where it's going to be. Again, this one's also in Parsons, but it's at Labette Health. We're partnering with Labette Health on this.
Right.
It'll be at the Rector Diabetes Center there at the hospital campus in Parsons. It begins again Thursday, August the 1st from 5:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. in the evening. And to register for that, again, you call the Independence Wildcat District office at 620-331-2690.
Awesome.
And registration of $25 to cover the cost of the food there.
Absolutely. And again, that's Barbara Ames alongside Jacob Weber here with the K-State Research and Extension Offices. We'll continue this chat in just a few moments. Thanks so much, guys.
Yep.
This is the Mighty 690 KGGF.